by owning an NFT, I take upon a certain identity, and I also shape the identity of that community. So I think the social aspect is very important to understand.
Almost everyone who works on new products at Instagram is focused on everyday people sharing and connecting, just like you and me.
The second was really I wanted to sort of give back to Y Combinators.
That would lead people to believe that at any point in time, we could have a giant recession.
They're just smart people who don't have the same level of access to capital. And we focus on people who we think have good ideas, but maybe less connectivity to capital when we meet them.
I don't love it when companies tell me they have no block, nothing's in their way to success.
That business is going to make such a big difference to the world that none of the rest of this matters.
All right. Hello, everyone. Welcome to another episode of 415 Stories. I'm your co-host, Taha. Today, we are recording another episode of the show, which is quite exciting, I would say, just because there's this new world of NFTs and cryptos and Web3, and there are a lot of things to keep track these days, but I am for sure not the best person to talk about these. When somebody knows that I, you know, am into internet, I do internet businesses, I'm, you know, a really technology nerd, they ask me about this stuff, I am like, you know, I'm not the, probably the best person to talk about this. But today we do have a guest who I believe is really knowledgeable about all the stuff that we're gonna talk. But before we do, Tarkan, how are you doing today?
Great, Taha, thank you. It's an amazing I have a new title, co-host at 415 Stories, so I'm excited.
Yeah, and what are you interested in these days? I mean, we've been talking a lot, and I think you found a new interest area that I saw you really interested in, and you're you know really digging deep into it. So what is that? What is that exactly you found interesting about?
Actually, when Bitcoin came out, I was thinking, like, I didn't get into it because I said I don't understand, but I realized that to understand you need to get in, so it is like it is something that you have to do. Anyway, I was really checking the saw this hype of NFT and I loved it, and then I wanted to get in. Danny is my good friend, actually. Welcome, Danny. And I asked him many things and he told me lots of things, and I understood that it is more than a hype. NFT is a great technology and Web3 will be really huge. So I'm really excited. I'm trying to read as much as I can and trying to learn as much as I can on this subject.
Awesome. And to learn about all this stuff, there's this great way of doing, as you mentioned, having a skin in the game. And then everything becomes much easier to learn since, you know, when you have a horse in the ride, it's, you know, more fun and easy to, you know, keep track of. And one of these projects that I was, you know, really curious about was this crypto caveman. I've been seeing people posting their caveman's NFTs. It's similar to some projects that I've seen, but the art is kind of different. There's a different design system. I didn't know anything about the project, but the more and more I learn, I become more interested in this. And today, luckily, we are together with the Danny Pawlowski, the co-founder of Crypto Cayman Project. Hi, Danny. Welcome to the show.
Hi, it's a pleasure to be here.
So, Danny, we will talk about everything about NFTs, Web3, and also the Crypto Cayman. But before we do, I want to get to know you a bit more. So before this project, or, you know, let's roll back into, you know, the early days of your career, what made you interested in, you know, this type of projects in the world, and what sparked your interest?
Right. So, I myself, I'm a developer and a programmer for more than a decade for sure, probably near 15 years or so. I have been doing early in my career, I started way back from like when PHP websites were the craze, and before HTML 5 and Web 2 and all of these buzzwords existed. And I lived through some of those buzzwords kind of coming, being not more than a buzzword, and then actually being defined by a certain community, and then leaving a certain legacy and becoming part of your everyday life as a developer and as a businessman. So I got into the whole crypto arena in around 2018 because of my brother. My brother chose to become a full-time crypto trader, which to me seemed like madness. There are two things that interested me. So one, of course, is that I finally saw that he is, I think the first time I heard it, I thought like, you know, like when you're a family member is about to join an MLM or a cult or something scary. I was like, are you sure you want to be? But after he did great and he showed that he has great talent in it and he actually managed to turn it into a career. So that sparked my interest. And the second thing is I started realizing that like, as I mentioned, you know, when I just started my career, there were buzzwords like Web 2 or HTML5 or when the mobile apps came out, there was everything had to become a mobile app. And, you know, the iPhone moment, everybody talks about the iPhone moment. So for me, I saw a lot of these, and because I was probably less experienced and also less prone to risks, I saw these things form. Some of them I discounted as just merely a fad or a temporary thing, like it will go away. But they didn't go away. They redefined everything and they stayed. Not necessarily in the form that they first appeared in, but they stayed, right? So if you think about Web 2, you can think today about how Google Maps and other projects redefine the experience of a website into something that is fully responsive and real-time application. Like if you remember what the world was like before Web 2, you would remember that you had to click on things and the whole page would refresh, and like the experience on the web was just painful. And then suddenly, you know, the buzzword came, but when it left, when it came away and the time passed, we actually were left with a complete redefinition of everything that we experience online. And I think the same thing happened for the iPhone moment. Like when it came out, the guys who were making the early mobile apps, they, like Tarkan said, they might have not understood what they're doing, but they were part of redefining something new. And for me, I really think that crypto as a whole, NFTs and the Web3 movement and the DeFi movements, they're actually in the process of doing something very similar to what Web2 and the mobile revolution did. And I don't know if we can understand it fully yet, but I think we can be part of building it. And that's what really excites me the most.
Yeah, that's amazing. And I think there's this simple explanation of Web3 comparing to Web1 and Web2. I saw this tweet and I really liked it, which is Web1 is read only, Web2 is read and write, and Web3 is read, write, and own. So I have some senses on, you know, the owning part, but I'm curious, you know, didn't we own anything on the Web3? Like, you know, I could, you know, own a website. I do own, let's say, podcasts. You know, I do a lot of things on the internet, on the Web2. What is exactly owning on the internet? Is this something about the network, you know, being a piece of the, you know, validators or something?
Right. So when people talk about the blockchain and ownership, what they're actually talking about is that you are the only entity that can command let's say in the basic DeFi or crypto definition, we're talking about a wallet. And then in the smart contract world, kind of where we start getting into blockchains like Ethereum or Solana or Avalanche or these kind of layer ones, then we're talking about smart programs. So, for example, let's talk about like a big social network out there, right? You open an account, but the account exists at the mercy of the social networks that exist today. Which means that if you, one time I wanted to go ahead and delete my data from Facebook. And if anybody ever tried to delete all of their data from Facebook, they know it's nearly impossible. Like they make it as difficult as it's possibly humanly can be. Because the data is technically not yours. It's hosted elsewhere, but it's also commanded by someone other than you. Now, the one of the things that, yes, I definitely agree. One of the things that Web3 and in general, the blockchain and the crypto movement is prioritizing is that anything that is attributed to me, I actually have the sole and ultimate and only power over it. So when it comes to tokens. If I wanted to send you tokens, only I can do it, or somebody whom I authorize. And there are all sorts of interesting things popping up, like, for example, this is the same social network idea where people are saying, well, what if we can build a social network where my data is mine? What if we can build an email service where my data is mine? And I think a lot of the Web3 movement definitely has to do with ownership.
Got it. And on the ownership context, I think Tarkan mentioned something really interesting about this, you know, being a part of this community. Tarkan, do you want to talk a little bit about that?
Yeah, actually, lately, I am starting to understand that buying a monkey or a caiman is not just having them. It is becoming a registered part of a club, a membership. For example, it's kind of like citizenship even. Like you, that caiman or that monkey becomes your, okay, ape, sorry, that becomes your like passport photo. When they see it on the Twitter or somewhere else, they understand that you belong to this community, and it is kind of a signature, like a signature, I don't know. So when you join, I realized the love. I mean, whenever I joined, I tweeted and all the people from community showed their love, and I started to get into that more, and I saw what they are doing, how it is working. I was super excited. So we are going to a new world. They coin it like metaverse. So in the metaverse, they will not know probably you are a Turkish or Muslim or Christian. They will know that if you are a caiman, if you are an ape, or which community you belong to more than that. So there is a common thing that they talk like, this is kind of your, it's kind of becoming your part of your identity on the digital world. So I like that part of NFT, but NFT is a technology and it is not just for that. Some people can just tokenize their art and sell their art. So there are different type of usage. What I meant with this club things has a great way to show how NFTs can be used.
Yeah, awesome. And let's dig a little deeper into NFTs. But before we do that, I want to give a disclaimer to our listeners, just because there are lots of things that we will mention can include money. So the things that we will be talking on this episode is not investment advice. And the episode is for information purposes only. And this should not be relied upon as a basis of investment decisions. So you should take independent financial advice from a professional or independently research and verify any information that you find in this episode. And once we clear that, we can talk about NFTs. So Danny, NFT is, I believe, you know, people are in these days are familiar with the term, the non-fungible token. There is digital art, even if you save as and download to your computer, it doesn't become yours. And I think past this phase of, you know, getting to know NFTs. But I want to ask you, what kind of things that you see in the world of NFTs that people don't get it that much? And maybe some aspects of the NFTs that people really doesn't understand much. Do you think that there are some misconceptions about NFT?
Well, there are definitely misconceptions about NFTs. I think one of the biggest misconceptions is that NFT is just about ownership of a specific file or something like this. And I think to understand NFTs, we also need to understand this human psychology a little bit more, because ownership or possession is not something that is a very simple concept. It's a very abstract concept. It's a concept that has to do with human perception. I think that NFTs need to be viewed as a social phenomenon as well as a financial or just a purely technological phenomenon. Tarkan really hit the nail on the head really well when he said that when you buy an NFT, you become a part of a club, so to speak, or a community, and you become like part of the whole community that owns that same NFT together with you. So whether it's the caveman, like our club, people really identify with the cave. We call our Discord the cave, And people say, welcome to the cave. You know, you become part of the cave, you interact with the people. Whether when it comes to other NFTs, they come with different communities. And if you think about it, like it was always like this before NFTs as well. If you think about traditional art, right? I'll mention a Turkish artist that I really like, Devrim Erbil. I don't know if you know him, but he's like one of the coolest Turkish artists in my opinion. And I really, really, really want to own one of his paintings at some point. I researched how much they cost, and they're about 10,000 grand per painting, right? Why are they 10,000 grand per painting, right? You can start a whole conversation about that. It's very subjective. So it's the world of like art and creation and membership in general was always a little tricky to understand. You know, there are clubs where you pay $50,000 to join a club, and that money doesn't even give you anything other than access to this club, right? Why would you want to be part of that club? Is it really worth spending those $50,000 for that club? You know, and I've heard of many like this. And I think that NFTs are interesting because they took crypto and they brought all those interesting societal and psychological and just human concepts into. So I think in a lot of ways, what people misunderstand when they think about NFTs, they think we're buying JPEGs or we're buying MP3s. If you think about it this simplistically, like, yes, of course, it sounds dumb. It sounds absolutely stupid. But it's not that. You enter into a certain community. And I really believe that what Tarkan said to be true, that like the golf clubs and the country clubs and the book clubs and whatever else and art ownership of the past also kind of spilled into the digital world. And by owning an NFT, I take upon a certain identity and I also shape the identity of that community. So I think the social aspect is very important to understand.
Danny, that was a great example, Devrim Erbil, because he has a style. So most of the people who are interested in art, who knows Devrim Erbil's art, would understand that it is done by Devrim Erbil. So same goes for Rothko, for example. Rothko has a style that it is full red, a canvas with full red, and there is one line. And people are questioning that if it is an art or not. It's not just about it is art or not, in my opinion. It is just when you own that, anyone can understand it. If you put it into your office, anyone would understand who is a little bit interested in art. That's it is an art from Rothko. And they would like, wow, you have a Rothko painting, which is really expensive. So you belong to something. It gives you a status. It's kind of like status symbol. So owning a digital art, like an avatar, for example, is representing me 24 hours, even when I am sleeping on the internet, who checks my Twitter and sees the caveman. They understand that I belong. I have this NFT. And that's amazing because normally we are spending more and more time on internet than outside, and people are not coming to my office, but they can visit my Twitter profile and can see that. So it is not just the love of art, in my opinion. It's also has a value like a status symbol.
Yeah, definitely. And one other aspect of NFTs is, I don't understand this much, Danny. I need your help, but somehow we are infusing these NFTs into a specific protocol like Ethereum, Polygon, or Solana. So what's that about? Is the infuse the right word to use about it? Or what's the thing that people use for it?
No, it's not as much infusing as it. So what, what is an NFT really in very purely technical terms? An NFT is a token that you can't divide into smaller pieces and sell smaller pieces of, and there's no other token like it. Although that's also very interesting because in our game, for example, we have a potion NFT token, which is acting a lot like a traditional token. So the lines are a bit blurry, but the idea is that there is a token. There's only one of that token. You can't sell half of it. You can't sell two of it. That's it. This is the one. And it's cryptographically identified and cryptographically secure. And you could transfer the ownership of that token all at once to another person. Now, to make it more of like an NFT and not just a string of characters, there usually is metadata associated with this token on a smart contract. And this metadata could be just a regular JSON computer file that has an address to some piece of art or to some music or to some file, anything really. Because there are multiple networks, multiple blockchains which could provide this functionality, NFTs right now are confined more or less to the blockchains on which they are implemented. So if you are building an NFT as a smart contract on Ethereum, you would have an Ethereum NFT. If you would build a program on Solana, you have a Solana NFT, and there's some Terra NFT now. And eventually, my take on this is that as we move into the future, the underlying protocols would matter less and less. So for example, even with the crypto caveman, we're already working on ways to make the caveman easily travel between Ethereum and Solana. So I think this is temporary. Like, you wouldn't really think of NFTs as Ethereum NFTs or Solana or Avalanche or Terra or Algorand or any other layer one. You would think of them just as NFTs. And I think the concept of this isolation of the layer one solutions, layer one is the blockchain, the Ethereum, Solana. I think that would disappear as blockchains become more interconnected.
Got it. All right, then. So let's talk about the Cayman project. Tarkan, what made you interested in this specific project? You know, what caught your eye, and what did you find interesting it about?
I saw it on Danny, his profile, and I was like, wow, what is this? And Danny started to tell me what actually is that is. At the beginning, I was like, normie had a suspicion about this, and I was like thinking like, okay, but why people buy it, and what does it, and how? I was like asking lots of questions to Danny, and I was super shocked. I don't want to bring the topic again why NFT is important, but it's like people are always when people talks about, for example, why do you buy flowers? She can't eat it. Why do you buy diamonds? What is the mean? So anyone can be questioned. And I was questioning NFTs at the beginning, but after Danny told me a lot, I was like super interested. Then thanks Danny, I told Danny I want to learn this. And he just helped me to join a meeting of their club. And I was like, wow, these guys are amazing. And I want to learn from them. I even didn't care what am I gonna get from there. I was just focused on being in the team and learn from them. Once I start learning, it become like a hobby. I mean, I was not expecting that I would be excited this much, since maybe the iPhone or the, as Danny told, or since the internet. Like, this is something big, and this will be really huge. I mean, I am really excited. That's my excitement took me to here.
Awesome. And Danny, let's hear the story. I'm really curious about it. How did the whole project start?
Right. So it started very kind of organically. So almost everyone on the core team knows each other from one way or another. So we were talking all the time. So from the very beginning of this time, you know, I've always wanted to do something that has to do with crypto in one way or another. And there were always projects popping up, and my brother was always telling me, like, dude, like, you know, it's cool that you're doing all these startups and you're doing all these mobile applications and this thing, but try to do something in crypto. It's crazy. It's cool. It's fun. There's a different sense of community. There's a different sense of innovation. And I was kind of brushing it off in a way, but you know, NFT just organically seemed to be like a thing that happened that fit a lot of the expertise of the people that we knew. So the 3D artist is a family member of a good kind of working relation of mine. And he happens to be a director at one of the biggest 3D schools in the world. So he, you know, I know him, and NFTs are happening in art, and we're talking to him all the time. And I'm like, wow, you know, like, and then there's the technology part. And by the time we started, I already understood Solana and was excited about Solana pretty well. So we decided to go for Solana. And then my brother, he was egging me on to join kind of the innovation and the movement for maybe almost a year by then. And I think it was kind of like a convergence of a lot of interactions that made all of us come together and say, you know what, let's try. You know, we don't know if we'll succeed. At any point, you know, we've gone through plenty of crazy milestones, like, you know, selling out the NFT in under 2 minutes to thousands of people. We've gone through a milestone of launching a token, trading that token with millions in daily volume and on decentralized exchanges. We've gone through the milestones of raising investments, and every milestone we didn't know that we're going to get there. We were just like having a bit of an adventure. So I think it's more of a convergence of a lot of desire to join into the kind of movement and the become part of this. And I would like, I think one thing that I would like to add is that we're discussing what NFTs mean and what Web3 means. And I've seen also a lot of articles on the internet saying like, oh, Web3, why Web3 is just a load of nonsense and you know, all of that stuff. I don't think we'll fully understand what and why until we look back. It's always very easy to define things when you look back. But I think the time now, it's not, you don't only understand when you put some skin in the game. You might even not fully understand it until it's all past. And I like the fact that in these technologies, you get to be one of the folks that are deciding and determining and defining these terms and what they mean. Rather than just having a ready-made playbook, like with a lot of startups right now, that's what you have. You have a playbook and you go by that playbook and you succeed. I think that the cool thing is like in the team, we have no idea what the next step is because everybody's taking the next step together in various directions and there is no playbook. And that's really exciting.
Got it. And I think there are two different audiences and two different NFT holders in the communities. The one that I see is just looking at a little more on the commercial side rather than, you know, trying to become a part of a community or owning a piece of the, you know, this network or the systems. They're more likely to, you know, just flipping this NFTs and, you know, making a couple bucks out of it. And the other parts of the communities that I see, the people who are really interested in the project, they do believe in the, you know, the team. They do believe in the, you know, the token economics. It is some kind of a different token word to pronounce. Yeah. The New York Times pronounced it in the first time in its history a couple of days ago. So it's probably a thing now. So I think for, I'm asking this question because I'm wondering for those who really want to get into a project and learn about, you know, NFTs while they do have a skin in the game. What are the ways to, you know, identify a good NFT project? In this case, joining to a community which has a token or an NFT. You know, what gives you a sense of when you see a project, yeah, this is good and they are doing a good job?
So naturally right now there's a lot of hype, right? So I guess the task at hand is filtering through the hype. And one of the ways that you can filter through the hype is by understanding whether the team that is behind the project is planning or intending to keep trying to provide value. Because if I would take what you just described, I would say there's probably three parties at least to each project like this. There's the value producers and providers, which are usually the team, the developers slash marketers slash, and this is very similar to startups too, right? In startups, you have the same three parties. You have the value producers, you have the kind of catalysts who are perhaps like financial side and the investors. And even in the traditional finance, anybody giving money to a value producer is expecting that value producer to you know, to produce value. Now, with NFTs, it's a little more tricky because once the NFT was sold once, the process is indirect. So it's not like a security or an investment where I am constantly producing value. The community becomes part of that value production as well. So it's very different from just traditional, you know, securities or investments. And then the third parties, the third party are the consumers, so to speak. The exciting thing about NFTs is that there is a big mishmash. The consumers are sometimes also the value producers and the financial parties, and it's not like as clear cut as it is in the traditional technology world. But I do think that one of the important things is to make sure that the central value producers are in it for the long run, and they're going to try to produce value. They're going to try to grow this thing. That's maybe the one most determining factor. And I would say the second determining factor would be to look at the community and the dynamics of the community. Are they, is there a community, or are they just all people who jumped in on the board to make a little quick buck? I would say that the strongest NFTs have strong communities who have a sense of community, and you would see them being showing dynamics that are not like very toxic. And, you know, some discords, you jump on a Discord, which is the main place people hang out other than Telegram, and you'll see people mainly just talking or complaining about the price or this of this or that. And then some discords you join in and people are saying literally, like on our Discord, there's people and that's a huge compliment for us as a team. They say like, you know, I can't wait to finish my work day and come home so I can chat on the cave. Which is super fun. And I think the strong communities determine teams that are there for the long run. And then it's up to the universe and some luck, because, you know, there is a lot of work and a lot of steps involved, and nothing can guarantee you that a project that has succeeded until a certain moment will keep succeeding. But if those ingredients are there, I really do believe that that covers a huge chunk of kind of due diligence that you should do.
Yeah, totally. How about you, Tarkan? How do you, you know, select and determine when you are looking at NFT projects? You know, if you were to invest or be a part of a project, what would you look at their, you know, teams, their communities?
Actually, what I have seen, if there have been lots of projects and they can do great art, but I think the team behind the project is really important. So it's really important if there is a really great developer behind the project for me, and or the team who manage this, are they serious? Are they going to commit their next 1 year or 1.5 year or 2 years maybe or maybe more? So I feel very comfortable with Caveman when I was listening this team, and that made me to jump in. And for the first time in my life, I give investment advice to a few friends to jump in as well, because it gained my trust. So it shouldn't be just a project that is trying to use the hype to get as many as sales. And if there is nothing going to happen afterwards, that's not good. It is similar to startups. When you make this first seed, pre-seed investment, you look at the team. If the team is good, you even don't care the most of the other signals. The team is good. If there is something going to be wrong in this thing, they will pivot and create something better. And I trust this team and do the investment. So it's like, it feels very likely like to make a pre-seed investment to me. So I just check most of the team behind the project and then make my decision.
Got it. And for those who are in the project, I think they are really excited. I'm talking about the Caveman. And as Danny mentioned, I'm seeing, you know, lots of chats through Discord, people talking about large variety of topics. And I actually want to hear about the what's next for the project. I know that you are working on a game. There are, I believe, some updates that's going to come up. What's next for the Caveman?
So one of the next things that we're doing is, of course, the game development aspect of it. So right now we have raised certain investments that we're using to expand the team into some full-time employees who are working like a full-time job on delivering a game. We've hired very seasoned and experienced Unreal developers, expanding the art team, and the goal is within the next few months to deliver a player versus player experience where people who hold the caveman NFTs could put them to kind of like a battle in a virtual arena and earn experience, items, and potions, and armor, and cool stuff that would be traded on the caveman market with the cave token. So the experience we're going to, I don't know if you've heard of like play to earn, but mm-hmm. the idea is like as you're playing, you're participating in the larger economy and you have an ability to earn certain items that have a value in the cave market, in the cave marketplace. So this game is like 100% of our focus right now. And the reason we're focusing on something a bit smaller, you know, a lot of teams are announcing like huge, huge announcement right now. What we want to try to do is we want to try to ship something small, and we have a lot of grander plans, but we want to prove the ability to ship and create first. Unfortunately, I think that with the hype, there are a lot of money grabs. And I think that a lot of the projects happening right now do not have the capacity to ship something interesting. And we really do believe that showing the capacity will unlock kind of like a next step of growth for us, and we can proceed into much grander ideas from there. But because our team, we're playing to the strengths of our team, and because our team comes from like gaming and 3D creation and technology backgrounds, obviously what we're making are interactive experiences that play to the strength of the team members that we have.
Got it. Yeah, pretty cool. So as we were talking about the hype, and I believe there were some other hypes in the past, Tarkan, I want to ask you, you know, I think you've seen a part of the Web 1 and the whole Web 2 hype and, you know, how it changed the way that we do things on the internet. When you look at the Web 3 and NFTs, where do you see us as in the, you know, this hype spectrum? Are we at, you know, let's say very, very, very beginning, or are we getting to a, you know, maturity in the market in terms of, you know, being educated and getting into more of a mainstream world for NFTs?
I recently saw a tweet. So my source is just a tweet. I don't know. I need to make a deep check. But it was written that in 1998, there were only 75 million internet users, and people were talking that internet is a hype, or, you know, this online buying stuff online is impossible, just people trying something new. That's like lots of things people were talking still. And now on this tweet, it's written that there are only 75 million wallets currently, which is like it can be considered as the 98, the year 98 of the internet. So even this made me really so much excited, because I saw that opportunity, and anyone can see what people can create with this. It is changing a lot of things, like not just, we are talking about NFTs, but the world is changing, finance changing, DeFi is coming, organizations are changing, DAO coming, and I believe there will be lots of new things. So I feel like it is kind of like the beginning of internet. So it is beginning of the hype, if it was hype, but I don't call it hype anymore.
What is your take on that, Danny?
I definitely agree. I think we're in the early days. People sometimes think that hype and, you know, so to speak, bubbles are a bad thing. It's a very complex financial discussion whether bubbles are a good or a bad thing, but, you know, like the modern financial approach, especially in the US, is that the monetary fund is actually controlling the economy in such a way that bubbles won't appear, but that's kind of a manual intervention. Finances and just human behavior, because all finances in the end a mass human behavior, are actually tending to create bubbles and lows and downs. Financial crashes are actually part of the financial kind of stability engine And only for the last few decades, we've been successfully preventing huge financial crashes artificially. And I think that hype is very natural, a very natural part of the life cycle of how humans adopt new things. They get super excited. I think without hype, people like myself or Tarkan wouldn't notice certain industries or things. And I think we are in a very, very central kind of maybe not first wave of hype, but maybe a second wave of hype around those things. But I do definitely think that whether there will be some sort of a cool down in the excitement, which there might be, realistically speaking, you know, if you look at other industries that I think are groundbreaking, for example, artificial augmented reality. I think that augmented reality is going to be a technology that is going to maybe in 10, 20, 30, 40 years change everything about how we interface with computers. And if you look a few years back, there was massive hype and all these HoloLens and different products. And now we're kind of in a cool down mode where nobody really wants to buy a VR set anymore. But I think that just if you look at every technology that has a lot of promise, you see those waves of hype. We're right now riding a sort of a wave of hype. I do think that it will, in the short term, die down somewhat. But I think that the next wave of hype is going to be even bigger. And I think that eventually we will find such penetration of all these technologies, whether it's crypto and NFTs and DeFi and all of that stuff. We will find such penetration of those technologies into daily life that those 75 million wallets are going to seem like a speck in the sand, just like 75 million internet users, you know, will seem ridiculous. And yes, crypto is notoriously hard to use right now. I've onboarded some people onto crypto myself, and it's like you need to give them an encyclopedia of knowledge. Like, here's what, you know, the wallets mean and the addresses mean, and the user experience is very, very rudimentary. But try sending an email in 1985 or something, you know. It's very much like that. I think that I'm 100% with Tarkan on the same boat. I think we're super, super early in terms of adoption and maturity. I do think that this certain kind of environment we're in right now, specifically even this year, is somewhat, I wouldn't call it a bubble, but I would call it like an overheated sense of excitement about things. I do think that we might see some periods where people are a little less interested, but I do think that the overall trend is to penetrate every layer of our lives.
Yeah, and I really agree with you on the, you know, the user experience is really bad these days in terms of, you know, this new Web3. The other day I was trying to buy an NFT from an artist, which was this photographer's first portrait photograph. So the NFT really has an artistic value in it. And I tried to buy it, and the hassle and the time I put into, you know, just transferring like $20 worth of crypto tokens into between some wallets was insanely ridiculous. Like, I had to buy this token and I have to transfer it to another wallet, but this wallet doesn't accept this specific token. I have to change it, and you know, there are lots of gas fees and everything. And I, at some point, I said to myself, you know, it is for me to learn. I have to do this to learn how it works, and I'll, you know, make sure that I will buy this NFT, however, or, you know, how much is it hard, it doesn't matter. But at the end of the day, there's a barrier of effort. So when you say someone like me, I'm not trying to brag, but, you know, I'm someone who is really interested in the internet and I know how to do things in some level. I can go on for some, you know, couple minutes, couple hours of, you know, digging into something without getting any results, any kind of a dopamine out of it, you know, getting my reward to move on. I can do that. But for most people, as we're talking about the majority, it's really hard for someone to, you know, just go around and do all the things to understand it. And Tarkan, I'm wondering, just because I think you're good at learning and getting into new things, how do you think people can learn things about this new world of NFTs and Web3s, especially, you know, there's this huge barrier of, you know, the early days of the new technologies. How would you learn those things by yourself?
I think I wasted my few weeks while trying to understand, because I started to read books. Like I tried to read this book from Neil Stephenson. It was Snow Crash. It's a good book. It's fun. It's a science fiction. It is the where the metaverse coined for the first time. But it is like I mentioned on our first podcast as well. It is like trying to learn how to use bicycle by reading about the history of bicycle. I mean, that's not the way. I think the way is the best way is to put some skin in the game. Try to buy the cheapest NFT. Try to sell something. I was telling Danny, I don't care what, but I want to earn my first dollar. I just want to earn $1 from this NFT. That would be okay. And that's how I started, actually. I just when I was reading things, I was not totally understanding what is happening. But when I got into this caveman and the community, when I joined the Discord, when I tweeted, when I see that people, it is not just a community, but also there is a culture. Like they were saying, welcome Tarkan, ooga booga. So it is like they have this community. And you start to feel it, you start to feel what it is. And then when you start to feel, you understand much better. So what I suggest, if possible, if financially possible, of course, one of the best way is to buy it the cheapest NFT or something that they would like. That money could be waste, I don't know. But at the end of the day, because now you have skin in the game, you get into the things much and much and much more. So it's the cost of education, I call myself at the first. I mean, if I wouldn't make anything out of it, it would be the cost of the education. And that's the best way to learn, in my opinion.
Yeah, totally. Instead of, you know, giving money to a course or something, you know, educational, in the same value of it, you can buy an NFT and, you know, learn things as you go. When you have a money on it, you become more interested into anything that you do, you know. When you find something for free, it's not, you know, as compelling as it was, you know, $1,000 of value. It's I think more seem more valuable. And Danny, I actually want to ask you something about the metaverse. So the term metaverse, I think it's not new, but it's pretty hype at the moment. But the way that people explains it confuses me, just because, you know, there's, I think, a idea of there will be a metaverse, something like, you know, we will type into our URL bar and we will enter into it. And then in that moment on, you know, we would have, you know, games, things, you know, places to meet and all the other things. But I think we do have something like this now, doesn't we? I mean, just because like metaverse kind of advertised to me by the content that I consumed as a new kind of a platform, as something new. Do you think that, you know, there will be a metaverse, a centralized value like an internet, or there will be, you know, lots of projects and things like, you know, websites and, you know, communities and things like we see today?
Right. So first of all, when you said like the internet is centralized, I think the internet as an entity actually started from being very decentralized as a concept, right? So the internet is a bunch of servers that have a certain protocol or a set of protocols to communicate with each other, whether it's HTTP or FTP or just the underlying network stack, TCP/IP. And the kind of polished centralized experience that we're getting now from the tech giants is built on top of a very decentralized platform. And I think when a buzzword, and metaverse is totally a buzzword, when it appears, it's sometimes difficult to understand what is going to remain after the hype goes away. Like, so when Web2 appeared, or HTML5 appeared. You know, HTML5 as a technology, it was targeted at the technical people, but it went everywhere. And people were, when they were ordering websites, they said, I want HTML5. I don't know what it is, but I want it because that's the buzzword, right? So with Web3 and Web and Metaverse, which are kind of interconnected in a way, there is a certain amount of hype and buzz. So if we go back to the past and analyze Web2, right? What was the difference between Web1 and Web2? Like, why did we go a whole version up? And if you really look at like the core experience that we retained from that whole hype, is that and it wasn't momentary. It's not like something became Web2 instantly, right? But what we had is a general effort and realization, both by the consumers and the creators, that the web can actually contain experiences that are far richer and more interactive than until the moment of that kind of hype. And I think, in my memory, Google Maps was the big revolution. To realize suddenly that you can have a fully interactive map with directions and everything, and you click something and it just boom, immediately happens. No refresh, nothing. And it might seem to you like a small thing, right? Like, oh, well, no refresh, interactive, like that's normal now. But because it's normal now, it's small. And I think that in Web3 and in the metaverse, you have a much bigger convergence of technology. So to enable the Web2, you had to converge multiple technologies and cultural moments together. You needed to have faster internet technologies. You needed to have better computers. You needed to have a certain amount of standard compliance between the browsers to make it happen. There were a lot of things behind the scenes happening. And I think the same thing will happen with metaverse and Web3. It's a little confusing to find what's the main thing that we'll look back and say, oh, that was that. But I do see that there's a certain convergence of VR, AR, more commonly available, incredibly fast 3D performance on phones. And, we for a few generations of phones now, we have pretty much a computer with a crazy graphics card in our pocket. There is more interest in watches and glasses that, you know, make certain experiences available. And then there's the whole financial and kind of ownership revolution on the other sense in the blockchain. The content creators feel like they have a direct access to the audience. So I don't know yet exactly what it's going to look like, but I think a mix of those. So I would probably predict that there will be some sort of an enrichment. I don't think it's going to happen in the way Facebook is trying to make it, like the meta thing, the metaverse, when you log into Facebook. But I do think that everything is going to become increasingly more interactive, more merging the virtual with and Corona helped that too, you know. Work and kind of collaboration took it forward earlier than other aspects of life. For example, we're having this podcast where sometime in the past, we would be only having this podcast if we were sitting in a studio and looking at each other live. But all these technologies proceeding are allowing us to have this podcast in a virtual studio, so to speak. So I think this time the work, kind of the workplace took it forward. But I think other aspects of life are going to start catching up to where you'll see a lot more interactivity. And I think that part of this interactivity will be augmented by ownership and the kind of easy way of monetary interaction that crypto allows. So I don't know if that's a very kind of clear answer, but I don't know how to be much clearer because I think we're still building the metaverse. I don't think it's going to be like you log in into a virtual world and, you know, I think it's more like we're having right now. I think it's more like you'll be able to take your office to more places that you go. I think it's going to be the way you purchase and interact and own things, the way you relate to art, the way you do games. Maybe things are going to become a little more interoperable. And then maybe 5 or 10 years from now, you'll be able to look back and pinpoint that, and everything is going to be full of that.
Yeah, Danny, I agree with you on the thing that we are still early, and I don't also think that there will be a, you know, one single gateway into this, you know, thing called metaverse, but more of a, like, you know, we are in an exploration phase, and I think we'll see along the way. But you also mentioned the thing about the AR glasses. So I'm not a big fan of the VR glasses because it's another reality, but I think AR glasses is something that will really change the way that we look at the interfaces. For example, the interface we interact right now is the screens, and why we don't, really think of it in a more sense like it can be on a glass screen. But you say that, it was, when these companies announced some AR glasses a couple years ago, it was a hype, and now there's this, not much of a hype timeline that we are seeing for AR glasses, but actually there are still some glasses are producing, there are still some projects, some big companies are paying attention to it. When you compare this timeline to the NFTs, do you think that, we are above this, we are behind this hype curve, or we are still, gonna get there?
So actually, it's a little more intricate than what you're describing, because let's take the AR technology as an example, right? The AR didn't actually go away anywhere. What happened is that everybody heard about it, and everybody said, wow, super cool. Everybody was talking about it at the supermarket, everywhere. But then it didn't go away. What happened is that the people who really need the AR in their process started actually buying the AR. I'll give you one example. I don't know if you knew, but big automotive companies that produce cars, they use AR. When do they use AR? And this is blew my mind when I heard that. They design cockpits. So it's very expensive to design a car cockpit, a dashboard. So what they do is they make a driver wear AR glasses that have a pass-through video experience, but also alternate reality on top of it. And he drives a completely empty car with no dashboard, just some QR codes and stuff like that. And they can project any dashboard onto his view. And he slowly drives and he says if this looks comfortable or not. And that completely revolutionizes the way that dashboards are produced. Now, it's so highly technical and so early and so niche that you as a consumer, as a general consumer, probably wouldn't know about it. But the guys that really want it, take it. And I think the similar thing is happening to crypto and to NFTs and to all of these things. I think the ones post the initial hype who are going to jump into this are actually going to be the guys who come from all sorts of perhaps surprising places, and they're going to say, that's really useful for me. I actually really need it. And I can name a few guesses, but nobody really can predict. Like, I would never in a million years to be able to predict that someone's going to make a guy drive with AR glasses and project dashboards. But those guys say, wow, for us, it makes total sense. So I think that we're going to see people who find it useful adopt it. And slowly, as the quality of the user experience, have you ever tried to connect to the internet like 20 years ago? If you guys remember the dial-up connection sound and you couldn't pick up the phone at the same time, the user experience is going to improve, and more kind of late adopters are going to come. So I think we're early. I think we're riding a hype wave. I think that perhaps what's going to happen is that behind the scenes, the NFT technology is going to start permeating probably the gaming industry with all sorts of microtransactions and all sorts of things that today are not very comfortable, and then other industries. And then the mass adopters are going to come. And everyone who's here now are like the enthusiasts, the tech people who want to pass all this crazy kind of hurdle of going in. And to make that easier, I was thinking, by the way, why don't we do this here on the podcast? You said that that the best way to try is to try with putting your skin in the game. So I'm just going to throw it out there. I'm willing to give one of my cavemen to someone from our listeners. I don't know, Tarkan, if you want to match me.
Yeah, I can match you. I can give one to a listener as well.
That's awesome, yeah. Guys. I do not have the second caveman, so I technically cannot, but that's so nice of you.
So we have more than one. So I guess we will give out one of our own cavemen to one of your listeners. And I don't know how it works logistically, but we would like to give it to someone who wants to try this NFT and maybe hasn't tried it before and experience it for themselves. And maybe we can save that person or two the experience of having to risk their skin in the game. So if you find us people that you think are worthy of receiving such an invitation, we'll be happy to do it.
That's awesome. That's so nice of you guys. I think we'll announce how to do this giveaway on Twitter in the next couple of days. So if you want to have a chance to win one of two Caymans, please keep an eye on your Twitter account. And Danny, this was a really great chat. I learned lots of great things. And thank you for sharing your ideas today. And thank you for your time.
Thank you so much for inviting me.
Danny, thanks for joining. Taha, it was great to be here again. And yeah, let's go.
All right, everyone. This is the end of the second episode of the second season of the show. Thank you for listening. And as we mentioned, if you want to have a chance to win one of two Cayman NFTs, please keep an eye on our Twitter accounts. And please let us know what you think about the podcast on Twitter at 415stories. And thank you for listening. Talk to you on the next episode.